Good morning. We're up to Shmuel Bet, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chaf. On page 202, we continue with the words of lamenting from David after the death of Shaul. Pasuk Chaf tells us that he continues and says, Al tagidu begas, al tivasu bechutzos ashkelo. Do not tell it to Gath, which, as we know, we learn, is a city in which the Plishtim lived. Don't tell them that Shaul died. Do not spread the tidings in the streets of Ashkelon. Why? Because, pen, possibly, Tismachna b'nos Plishtim, the daughters of the Plishtim are going to be so happy when they find out this news. Pen talozna b'nos harelim. Talozna, the Mesudasion translates as afu inyan simcha. They're going to be so happy, they'll be so rejoiced to have known that Shaul died. So please do not say anything. Ask the Radak, what are you talking about? He was the one that died in the battlefield against the Plishtim. He died, the Plishtim obviously knew he died. Furthermore, they took his remains after removing his head, putting it by idols. They hung his body on the walls. Everyone knew that he died. What does it mean that David is saying, please, al tagidu begas, don't tell the Plishtim that Shaul died? Of course, they already know. Says the Radak, zehu al derech hakina. This is the proper way in which a person laments and eulogizes a great individual such as the king Shaul. Ki yodim hayu, because certainly they knew. Ki heim hayu hargim Yisrael, they certainly knew that he died at war. All the people knew this. This was obviously well known. This was the enemy of the Plishtim. This was the king. Obviously, this would be late breaking news. Everyone would have found out about it. So the Radak explains that this is just the way that people lament. That they say, please don't talk about it. Don't speak about it too much. It's possible that the idea behind this is exactly as it says. Don't tell everyone about it. I, the Plishtim, knew, but only the people that really were on the battlefield and the people that lived in that city where his body was hung actually was aware that he died. Not every single person among the Plishtim knew this. And therefore, it's possible that we just don't want anyone to talk about the fact that he died, because until that point, we can always deny it. And unfortunately, as we know in this day and age, there's no shortage of people who deny. We have people in this generation, in the year 2007, that lived through the Shoah, through the Holocaust, yet there are those that actually deny that it ever happened. And they say, prove it to me. And they say, what do you mean, prove it to me? It's a fact. It's a 100% historical fact. I don't believe it. And therefore, we could also say the power of denial is that you can say, no, Shaul's actually still alive. What do you mean? He was hung. He was killed. He died. Whatever. He stabbed himself. Everyone saw he died. Prove it. He's not dead. So once the Jewish people publicize that he's dead, then it's a fact. It's 100% that he died. However, up until that point, if we do not talk about it, then it's possible, since not everyone saw it, maybe it was fabricated, maybe it was someone that looked like the king, maybe it wasn't him. The Ma'am Loewes gives another interpretation, that when he says don't tell anyone, doesn't mean don't tell anyone that Shaul died, because certainly, as the Radak pointed out, everyone knew that the king had died. But rather, explains the Ma'am Loewes, that it means don't tell people our reaction to after his death. That now that he died, we have now prepared our military to learn how to shoot the bow and arrow. Now we are going to really be prepared with our weaponry. Don't tell people that, because it's clearly a sign of weakness that we do not have this skill yet, and therefore we don't want anyone to publicize this aspect of how we are reacting to the death of Shaul. Let's continue with the next pasuk, pasuk Chaf Aleph. Hare HaGilboa, these mountains of Gilboa, David says, Al Tal, they should not allow dew to go upon them. The Al Matar Aleichem, there should not be any rain upon you. Usdei Tarumos, we'll discuss what this means. The basic translation of Usdei Tarumos, or fields of bounty. Kisham Nigal Magin Giborim Magin Shoel Bli Mashiach Bashamen. We should not allow it to rain, or should not, dew should not fall upon this, for rejected there was the shield of the mighty ones, the shield of Shaul, as if unanointed with oil. Bli Mashiach Bashamen. What does this mean, Bli Mashiach Bashamen? So the simple explanation, as the Radak points out over here, is Columbus to say, Kein Nigal Magin Giborim Shel Shaul. The person who was anointed with oil, namely the king, the anointed one of Hashem, the Mashiach Hashem, in which he calls him a few sentences before this, Shaul was not protected as he should have been. And maybe David was saying this as he is now a king, and he was almost giving, within this lament, words of tochacha, of rebuke and musar, as if to say, part of the reason why he died is because you ran away on the battlefield. You did not remain loyal and protect the king. And since you did not do so, that's the reason why he died. You were the Magen Shaul. You were the shield. And you were no longer there for him. And therefore, because of this, he died. Rashi gives another interpretation. What exactly is this? You're going to start taking oil and smearing it on a shield? That sounds a little bit silly. What's the purpose of that? So Rashi says like this. Rashi says, Kisham Nigal Magin Giborim, that Megini Or Hayulahem, the shields that they had back in the good old days, was not the ones that we see on television, these huge metal solid shields that are bulletproof. How did they make their shields? Their shields were actually made out of skin, hides of animals. Obviously, they got extremely, extremely hard, and therefore, that's what they used to protect themselves. When someone would lift up a sword against them, they'd hold up this hide to protect them. And what would they do with oil? Rashi says something amazing. When they went out to war, they used to anoint the shields with oil. Why would they put oil on their shield? Says Rashi, in order, that when the swords would try to cut right through that hide, through their shield, once oil was on the shield, which also would get on the blade, it would slide right off. And therefore, the pasuk is saying that Shaul's shield, it was like it was Bli Mashiach Bashamen, that there was no oil upon it, and that they were easily able to cut right through his protection and immediately thereafterwards die. Continuing with the next pasuk, Chaf Bet. David continues in his lamenting, and he says, Midam chalolim mechelev giborim, keshes Yehonasan lo nasug achor. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Yonasan would not recoil. Vecherev Shaul, and the sword of Shaul lo soshavreka, would not return empty. So we look on the bottom on page 203, continue on 204 in English. He says, alternatively, Israel suffered heavy casualties on Mount Gilboa before Shaul and Yonasan were killed. Normally, a leader might become demoralized upon seeing his army slaughtered and would lose his resolve to continue fighting. He might flee, hide, surrender, but he would not be able to continue fighting as if nothing had happened. Not Shaul and Yonasan. Yonasan's bow did not recoil from seeing the blood of Israel slain, nor did Shaul's sword return empty. So what this pasuk is saying is the tremendous courage and bravery that both Shaul and his child, his son Yonasan, displayed. That even though everyone else ran away, and there was blood spilled, and they knew that they were on the side of the slaughter, nonetheless, they did not allow their weaponry to recoil. The bow of Yonasan continued to shoot to his very last moments until he personally died. And the sword of Shaul, the king himself, Lo Sashubrikam, did not remain empty as though that there was not a drop of blood on it before his. He continued to fight the good fight, even though he knew that he was going to lose. Says David, this is the greatness, the courage that was displayed by these two giants, these two great warriors, these two great individuals, Shaul and Yonasan. Shaul v'Yonasan, the pasuk says in Chav Gimel, Hane'ahavim v'hana'imim b'chayehem. They were loved, says the Masudas Sion, that hanimim is also an inyan of ahu v'choviv. They were very pleasant and very cared for. People thought very highly of them, b'chayehim, in their lifetime. Also, v'mosam lo nifradu, in their death, lo nifradu, Masudas Sion says, m'loshen parod prisha, they did not separate, they did not part. Which some means that in Olam Haba, they were both zocha to be imya b'michatzasi, that they were together with the great prophet Shmuel, that they were both on the same level as Shmuel, that is namely Shaul, as well as his child Yonasan. The v'mosom u'nifradu continues the verse, min sharim kalu miarios gaveru. They were swifter than eagles, stronger than lions, how powerful they were. And if we look in Rashi over here, when it says, Minisharim Kalu, that they were swifter than eagles, unbelievably, Rashi says, Lasos Ratzon Borom, to do the will of their creator. Which means that it shows that there were tremendous tzaddikim, there were righteous people. And what did they do that showed their righteousness? So we can certainly say that this is connected to the pasuk before. That even though they should have run away, which would be the natural instinct, the natural inclination of any human being is to preserve their life, nonetheless, they remained steadfast on that battlefield. They did not move. And the reason why they did not do so is because Shaul had heard from the prophet Shmuel himself that you will die on the morrow on the battlefield. And you should be on that battlefield. You cannot run away. You must die. So he was willing, even Lasos Ratzon Barom, says Rashi, to fulfill the will of their creator, Hashem, so much so that they are even willing to do that which goes against the very grain, the nature of a human being, of remaining on a battlefield against impossible odds. Says the Radak, what does it mean, l'nifrodu, that they did not run, they were not separated even at their death? Kolomer Rashi said, Radak says, Afa pi shahayu yodim mosam b'mechama. Even though they knew they were going to die at war, l'nifrodu me'im Hashem, they did not separate from God. V'natsru v'nasru min b'mechama. Similar to the way we're reading Rashi, is that they did not flee, they did not withhold themselves from continuing at war. And the Masudas David continues and says, B'chayehim, in their lifetime, means Odom B'chayim, while they were alive, Hayu Ne'ahavim Animim L'chol B'nei Adam. They were loved by everyone, which implies even himself, implying he even cared for and loved Shaul, the man who was chasing after him to kill him. Because it says, after all, the Masudas David, L'chol B'nei Adam, everyone, he loved all people, that all people loved him. Ratzalomar means to say, Ma'od hoy mikubol malabrios. People accepted him in his position, b'chaviven b'enei kula, and they were very much beloved in the eyes of everyone. Continues in the Siddhas David, the most someone if Radu that they did not part upon their death, Av Akar most someone if Radu Mina, Ava Vanima. Unlike the way that Radak pointed out that they did not separate from the battlefield, it means that the love that the Jewish people had for Shaul and for Yonasan did not die with them, but rather it continued even after their death. Their memories were not soonly forgotten. Pasuk of Dalet continues and says, Benos Yisrael, the daughters of Israel, and we'll see different interpretations what it means, Benos Yisrael. Benos Yisrael El Shol Bechena. And when it comes to the daughters of Israel, they will cry over the loss of Shol. We'll see why specifically the Benos Yisrael cried and not everyone else. Because the Pasuk tells us, Hamal Bishchem Shani, that he clothed them. Shani explains the Masuda Sion is Tolash Shani. Semer Tzibo Edom, red, beautiful, scarlet finery. Imadonim with the most beautiful of delicacies and finery. Hamal Adi, Zahav Alavushchen. On their garments was Adi Zahav. Adi says in the Sionis Indian Kshod, which is referring to beautiful jewelry. Jewelry made out of gold. Shaul, for some reason, gave to the Benos Yisrael beautiful gold, beautiful clothing, and tremendous amount of food. Explains the Radak what was the reason for this. Actually brings down a dispute. What does it mean, Benos Yisrael? The Radak tells us, V'yesh l'farsho k'mashma'o. Some interpret it as it literally means, Ki alavush atov hana adan aguf k'mahamachal atov. That's referring to that he gave delicacies, he gave good food. And according to the words of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nehemiah, there's a dispute exactly what does it mean when it says in this Pasuk, Benos Yisrael. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, very interesting language here in the Radak, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Benos Yisrael, Elu Benos Yisrael. When it says the daughters of Israel, that means the daughters of Israel. It's pretty obvious. But we'll see that not everyone holds that that's what it means. But if you want to say literally that the women will cry, explains the Radak, Vaday al Shaul Bechina, they'll certainly cry upon the loss of Shaul. Why? Bishan Shahayu Balehem Yosin Mechama. Because when their husbands would go out to war, he didn't just leave them high and dry, that the women, the children would die of starvation because their husbands, who may have been the breadwinners of their home, were no longer there to provide for them. Shaul was there to provide, says the Radak, Hayazanon, Mefarnesin, Malvishan, Shani Aladonim. Shaul used to give clothing and food and all the most beautiful delicacies and the most beautiful jewelry to these women. And therefore, they certainly will cry a bitter tear upon their death. And therefore, we can also understand that another reason why they cried was not just because of the beautiful jewelry, but Shaul was a tremendous soldier. Yonasan was a tremendous soldier. They realized as long as Shaul was on the battlefield, there was a very good chance that their beloved husbands would come back unscathed. But now that Shaul is no longer, and now the Plishtim have defeated many, many Jewish people, in fact, who died on the battlefield, the others who ran away, the next war is inevitable against the Philistines. Therefore, they are even more worried, and they'll cry over the loss of Shaul, a great warrior, because now the chances of their husband's survival at war is all the more difficult. The Radak is a different interpretation, quotes the words of Nehemiah. From Nehemiah Omer, Benos Yisrael, El Sanhedro Shel Yisrael, this is referring to the Sanhedrin. What on earth is going on? Why would the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court system, why would the people therein cry bitter tears? Says the Radak, B'shah Shehoi Yishol Shemeh Tam Halacha, Yotis Mepi Tamun Chacham, Hay Omid Menashko Apiv, that when he would hear beautiful gems, beautiful pearls coming out of a scholar's mouth, a halacha, a Devar Torah, a Drasha, something impressive, he would be so moved that he would go up to that person and embrace that person and also kiss them to show his respect and his love for the Torah that was taught. And therefore, Remember, he obviously showed a tremendous amount of respect to the Talmidei Chachamim, to the scholars, to the leaders of the Sanhedrin, to the Gedolei Hador. And therefore, what a great model of a king he was. That he wasn't just a powerful king that reigned over people and whatever decisions he made were the rules, and he didn't care about Torah. God forbid. He cared about Torah. He loved Torah. And therefore, he was able to therefore, thereafter, make sure that all of his servants, all the people underneath him, would adhere to Halacha, would adhere to the words of the Sanhedrin. Now that he is no longer, the Sanhedrin cries, because they say, what will be with Klal Yisrael? What will be, after all, without a leader who will be able to direct them in the proper path? The great chance that the Jewish people will turn away and they will continue, God forbid, to sin. That tragedy could easily now happen because of the loss of the great, powerful king, King Shaul. Continues Pasuk Chav Hei. Eich naflu giborim betoch hamilchama. And this pasuk we've had before. In fact, this sounds very similar to the verses we had before in the same lament. Yehonasan al-Bamosech ha-Cholol. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Yonasan slain upon your heights. And as the Mephoshim explain, very often in a lament, in a kinah, things are repeated over and over so that it should draw into your heart the emotion and the feelings that are necessary to mourn the loss of such a great individual, someone as great as Shaul. We look over here on page 205 in the English, says something on this pasuk as well. He says in the next verse, he explains that he singled out Yonasan because of their great love for one another. Let the women weep for Shaul, but no one can match David's grief for his soul brother. And therefore, now we're going to see Pasuk Chavav. Sar li alecha, achi. I have so much pain for Achi, my brother. It wasn't really his brother. Says Mr. Dusion, Chaviv ka'achi. He was so close to me, like a brother. Like brotherhood. We were as brothers. That's how close I was to Yonasan. Na'amto li ma'od. The stress that he had over the loss of Yonasan. Because Yonasan, you were so pleasant to me. He was so close, so much like a brother. In fact, we also realize that he was a brother-in-law because he was married to the king's daughter. Michal was a princess. David, as we recall, upon defeating Goliath, married Michal. And therefore, in some way, they literally were like brothers. But they were close. And then we have perhaps the most difficult sentence in this parak, in which unfortunately very often is misquoted to tell something extremely disgusting and negative about the great tzaddik, David HaMelech, as well as Yonasan. The pasuk continues and says, Nifalta ahavoscha li mi'ahavas nashim. Literally, that your love was more wondrous to me than the love of women. Now, of course, that means absolutely nothing according to the way that some people who have alternative lifestyles like to translate it. But very often in life, we see what we want to see. We hear what we want to hear. But the Mephoshim explain what this really means. We'll start off with the words of Rashi. Excuse me. We're going to actually start off. I'd like to share with you, what does it mean, this love that he had was greater than the love of wives? So it's brought down over here, rather in the Radak. The Radak says, what do you mean, wives? It's referring to his own wives. Ratzalomer shtei hanashim shehayu lo David. David had two wives, Abigail and Ahinoam. And you can maybe say, well, how about Michal? But unfortunately, he has a very far distance relationship with Michal. He hasn't seen her for so long because she was with Shaul. Shaul obviously would never allow him to go back to the palace. He would have killed him. And therefore, his closeness was really with the two wives of Abigail and Ahinoam. Says the Radak, Yadoni Abizal, that not only was he loved his wives, he loved his two wives, but I loved Yonas even more. And the difficulty with those words is, it's a pretty nasty thing to say, especially if your wife is there. You say, oh, I love you so much more than my wife. Oops, I didn't realize you were in the room. Sorry. Hell, you're probably, she's going to change the locks in your door and not going to give you dinner that night. Therefore, the Radak gives us a different interpretation. He says, another answer, Vadoni Avizal. My master, my father, the Radak's father, answers, Perish mi'avas nashim l'mashahim ohavos bein baleihem bein b'neihem shavosin chazakalahem. That when it comes to the love, a woman's love, explains the Radak, and this is certainly up to interpretation, that a woman's love for her husband and children is stronger than a man's. But Yonasan's love for David was even stronger than that. If we look on the bottom of page 205, we have a beautiful answer, which connects directly to this week's Parsha and Parsha's Vayetze. According to the opinion of Menachem Azaria of Fano, he writes in the Targum, it refers, who are these women? It's referring to the two women, Leah and Rachel. Leah and Rachel? What is Leah and Rachel, these two co-wives, have anything to do with this sentence? Why is David mentioning them? So he beautifully explains like this, that David meant to compare Yonasan's unselfish affection for him to that of the two sisters who were married to Yaakov. Just as it was unnatural for a prince such as Yonasan to give up his throne to someone else, to David, so it was unnatural for a woman, Rachel, to give up her fiancé to her sister, to Leah. Nevertheless, just as Rachel's love for Leah led her not to protest when Leah was substituted for her under the marriage canopy, so too Yonasan stepped aside gracefully in favor of David. So beautifully, Rabbi Nachum Azaria explains that when the Pasuk tells us, Nifalta avos chalim yavas noshim, that the love that you have is even greater to me than the love of women, is because as great as we can possibly compare you and your unselfishness to Leah and Rachel, the reality is, you're even greater. Because after all, you could have easily have looked and said, I could be the king of the entire Jewish people. Instead, I'm going to forgo that tremendous honor, that tremendous power. Something which is almost impossible to let go of. He's going to be the take over the position after Shaul, his father, had died. But he didn't. He did not care. He said, it's all right. Even though I may be entitled to it, I'm willing to give this to you. I'm willing to let you to be the king. How great Yonasan was to be able to share and to be able to give something which really he's entitled to another person. And that's the connection. That also when it came to Leah and Rachel, the greatness of Rachel, which she was entitled to marry Yaakov. That's the deal. He worked for 7 years for Rachel, as for Bitcha Katana, specifically for her. But nonetheless, she unselfishly gave over the siman and the signs to her sister. Concludes the parak, Eich naflu giborim v'ovdu klei milchama. How have the mighty fallen and the weapons of war gone to waste? What are the klei milchama? He's busy mourning the loss of great people, of Shaul and Yonasan. And now he's worried that there was some swords missing. There was a couple of bows that are no longer in the supply closet. They're no longer in the inventory. Who cares about a sword? Who cares about a bow and arrow? Shaul and Yonasan. It seems a little degrading that he's speaking about the klei milchama. And therefore Rashi explains, as well as the Radak and the Masudas David as well, say the same thing, that Shaul v'Yonasan, Shaul yukli zayin shal Yisrael. That it's not referring to the weapons. It's referring to the people. Shaul and Yonasan were just like weapons. Like you, when it comes to someone who knows karate, they say, my hands are deadly weapons. Those people, when it came to war, were like deadly weapons. But it wasn't necessarily because of their swords. When it comes to a powerful leader, he can do more than just pick up a sword and maybe swing it around a few people near him. But someone who's a tremendous master at war and military tactics, such as Shaul, such as Yonasan, their loss is devastating. And they are literally kli melchama. Not necessarily with the swords or the bows and arrows, but with their minds, with their powerful ways of thinking, to be able to defeat their enemies. And unfortunately, they're no longer with us.